Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the News Sentinel. John, Vols are one game into the season, but they are 1-9 in terms of their record, at least according to Jeremy Pruitt. Pruitt said that at Monday's press conference, he said that he considers every game on the schedule a loss until you go out and win it. So he said right now Tennessee is 1-9. Now, that was a really interesting kind of way of looking at life.
Well, the power of positive thinking obviously doesn't enter into it. You also could speculate that maybe he should be fired.
Fortunately for Jeremy Pruitt and the Vols, they are not 1-9. They are 1-0. 31-27 victory in Columbia, South Carolina on Saturday night. John, it's kind of a mixed bag in terms of Tennessee's performance. Some good, some bad. Did you find there being more positives or more things to be concerned about from Saturday?
It's really harder than ever to judge a team based on one game now. I was concerned. I would be concerned that the offensive line didn't play as well based on all the expectations. I really expected it to control the line of scrimmage from start to finish and run the ball. It couldn't run the ball in the first half. Pass coverage was awful. Still, it's really difficult to project what's going to happen in a game when you have no idea who might be playing.
I feel like we have to touch on Jarrett Garantano's performance because everybody wants to always talk about Jarrett and criticize his performance. You're not a Tennessee fan unless you're criticizing Jarrett Garantano's performance, I think. Because I don't know about you, John, but the overwhelming response from Saturday's game that I heard was, why didn't Garantano get benched? And it's so easy to criticize the quarterback. I'm at the point where I'm just sort of at my wit's end with it. I mean, I feel like if anybody expected anything different than inconsistency from Garantano, that's on them, you know, whether you're a coaching staff, whether you're a fan, whoever you are. If you expected Garantano all of a sudden to be a good quarterback, that's on you. You know, it's like the saying goes, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. If not the first time, how about the second, third, fourth, fifth time? You know, at this point in his career, we know who Garantano is. He's gonna make some really good throws at times. He's going to make some bad throws at times. But they feel like he's the guy that probably understands the offense the best, that makes the best decisions, may not always make the best throws, but he makes the best decisions. And my takeaway from Saturday, I guess I'm making it pretty clear here, I'm not really hiding it, is I didn't think he played great, but I thought Tennessee had about four or five issues that were bigger than their quarterback play on Saturday.
Agreed. Blake, I would take Garantano's numbers, his stats against South Carolina. If you said, okay, you can have the same numbers every game for the rest of the season, I'd take those numbers and never look back. He didn't have a turnover, hit the game-winning touchdown pass, completed more passes than he didn't complete, and he had a clutch run of about 19 yards. I'll take that every Saturday from me. And fans, you're right. They just don't like Jared Garantano as a quarterback. But I don't think Tennessee has any better option.
Well, I mean, I think we saw that throughout last season. They tried other options last year in Maurer and Shrout. Sure, I would like to see more, at least of JT Shrout. We didn't see a ton of him last year, too. But I just don't think the time to see him is when you got a game hanging in the balance, a game that you can't afford to lose against South Carolina. And Garantano was wildly inconsistent, like usual. Maybe not wildly, but he was inconsistent. He probably could have completed at least a half dozen more throws than he did and had a really excellent night. As it was, I thought he was average to a little bit above average, but he made some big throws. I mean, I'm just thinking, what if you'd pulled him from the game in the fourth quarter there when he hit those back-to-back passes to Brandon Johnson and Josh Palmer? I mean, that pass to Brandon Johnson, I get that he was wide open, but he had some defenders barreling down on him in the pocket, made a nice read, found Brandon Johnson, and then the next pass was as good a throw as we saw all night from either quarterback in finding Josh Palmer for a touchdown. And that was a big moment in the game right there. I thought he made a really heady play on the flea flicker nobody was open. And so Eric Gray leaked out of the pocket. Garantano found him to set up a touchdown there. You mentioned the scramble. The thing is, he was throwing to open receivers all night. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is he wasn't always hitting those open receivers. But I think if you're a coach, you'd much rather have that. Your quarterback's constantly finding the open guy on the field than he's chucking it into double coverage and risking interceptions. I mean, he was always throwing to the right guy. It just wasn't always on target.
Well, I was impressed with Tennessee's receiver play. They, as you said, they were getting open. One of the worst-looking offenses you'll ever see is when the receivers can't get open. Now, if you're watching on TV, you might not can see that, and you see the quarterback holding the ball, then maybe getting sacked or scrambling around in the pocket, looking, and the guy still can't get open. I mean, that is really, really disheartening for an offense. When your guys can't beat their defensive guys, that's an ugly look.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to put Garantano and that to bed then, because I know I'm going to get cast as like the champion of the Garantano fan club, and that really isn't where I feel like I stand. I don't think this guy is quite as bad as some people want to make him out to be, but I'm going to move on and let it rest. I want to back up though and follow up on something you said about the wide receivers, John, because somebody had asked me the area of the roster that most surprised me in a pleasant manner on Saturday, and then the area of the roster that maybe I was most surprised by in a negative way on Saturday. And I found the positive way it was the wide receivers. I mean, we heard about Brandon Johnson and Velus Jones in the preseason, but so many times you hear about veterans in the preseason just because coaches want to talk about their veterans in the preseason, even if they know they're not going to give them much. That's just what they do, right? And so I didn't know, like, is this just coaches providing lip service to a fifth-year senior like Brandon Johnson or what? But, you know, I mean, those two guys were really good. Josh Palmer showed me a lot. I mean, I'd always viewed Josh Palmer as kind of a big play threat, but not that down-to-down receiver. Well, on Saturday, he was that guy you could look to in any situation. Ramel Keaton got open several times. Garantano didn't always hit him, but he got open a lot. And really, you know, we talked so much about freshman receivers that might make an impact. Tennessee didn't even really have much need to play its freshmen on Saturday because the veterans looked so good.
We talked about this in the offseason, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I thought we both believed that Tennessee had potential at wide receiver. You just don't know if potential will be converted into production or how soon that will take place. I like Tennessee's receiving core better right now than I did last season. I know it's just one game, but I thought it was too dependent on Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway. Do you remember any drop passes? I'm just trying to think of some off the top of my head.
There was one in the fourth quarter. There was really only one drop pass. It was in the fourth quarter. Garantano hit Keaton in the hands on a second and sixth throw. Would have moved the chains. And
that's right. I remember now.
Yeah, but that was the only one. And then you add in Brandon Johnson's catch of a pass that really probably shouldn't have been caught. I mean, that was just a fantastic catch there. So I figure that sort of balances out the drop. So yeah, I thought it was a really solid night from them. And Velus Jones was a guy, you know, you mentioned, John, that, you know, last year, for as good as Juwan Jennings was and Marquez Callaway was really good on those 50-50 balls, Tennessee didn't have much of a wrinkle or much variety in what it did with its receivers. I thought Velus Jones gives them someone completely different than what they had in their offense last year. I mean, he caught three passes on jet sweeps, which were glorified handoffs. One of them, I always love, you know, unique formations. And I think, you know, a lot of fans kind of like to go deep on those X's and O's. And when a coach does something a little different, I thought it was kind of fun one time when Jim Chaney put Velus Jones as the H-back in the backfield. And then they flipped it to him on a jet sweep. You know, it wasn't always just him coming in motion from a wide receiver slot. There was once where he was pretty much lined up as a tight end, you know, as an H-back. But he also caught a pass on a traditional route. He caught a wide receiver screen. He just seems like – and he had a couple of good kickoff returns. He seems like a guy that they can do a lot of things with. And I wasn't necessarily expecting that. I knew he would be better than what they had in the return game, but I really just saw him as a kick returner. I didn't expect him to do what he did as a receiver.
Yeah, I think not only that, he was a factor in the pass game, but he showed his speed, and Tennessee needs more speed in the receiving core. I think Jones gives somebody, opponents have to think about him now. I think this receiving core can do a much better job of stretching the defense.
How about the flip side of that, John? Maybe an area of the team that you had expectations for that you didn't think, you know, we talked about the wide receivers being an area to feel good about. I thought, you know, was a pleasant, maybe not a surprise, but still a pleasant development on Saturday. How about the flip side of that? Maybe an area that you felt pretty good about with this roster that maybe didn't show you much on Saturday.
I didn't feel pretty good about the offensive line. I felt really good about the offensive line. I thought it would go out there from the first snap against South Carolina and take charge of the game. I really did. I was surprised by that, but maybe South Carolina was too. But I just thought once Tennessee decided we're going to run the ball, South Carolina wouldn't be able to handle it. So now I'm wondering about that offensive line. You don't want to overreact on one game.
John, moving forward, Missouri on Saturday, the Tigers, I know, really didn't – you saw more of that game. You were I believe you watched that game on Record, right?
I did.
Yeah. I was not able to see much of that game. What were your impressions of the Tigers? I know they sort of made the score look a little bit more respectable late, but, you know, is there any reason Tennessee should be concerned about this game? I mean, I think this was one we all felt is a game Tennessee had to win. Do you feel like there's reason for concern on Saturday?
I think you have to be concerned about every game. I think there's just going to be a lot of upsets this year, a lot of uncertainty, in part because of the COVID pandemic. But I looked at Missouri, and it was kind of a funny game because I'm watching and they're making a few nice runs in there. Part of that, though, is they have such low expectations for anyone opening the season against Alabama. Ooh, they made 7 yards. Wow, that's unbelievable. So anything it did well was magnified, and I thought the reporting on the game reflected that. Bottom line, it was 35-3, and Nick Saban started playing his backup. That easily could have been a 50-10 game, and I don't know what good you say about that. Yeah, it's a concern. I think anytime you have a running quarterback, he gives an extra dimension. And anytime your defense fails to cover it any better than it did against South Carolina, you're wondering about a repeat. So those questions come into play, and you say, yeah, should be concerned. But I think it's interesting. Tennessee is, what, a 10.5-point favorite?
You mentioned Cam Smith and what an Achilles heel he became for South Carolina on Saturday. He got picked on there when he had entered the game in the second half as a replacement cornerback. Got flagged for pass interference, got burned on that Josh Palmer touchdown, and then they had that punt bounce off the back of his leg. And it was kind of an area that Tennessee, I thought, pretty effectively exploited. The punt was just sort of lucky, but, you know, they did seem to make a concerted effort to attack him in the passing game. I guess, are there any areas of this Tennessee team that you think could become such a weakness that, you know, Tennessee could get exploited in those areas, maybe not just in one game, because we saw over the middle of the field really got exploited on Saturday, but, you know, not just on one particular game, but that could be a weakness that could be exploited, you know, going forward?
Linebacker play. Henry Toa had a great interception return for a touchdown. He really looked like a pretty good running back. He was an aggressive runner, and he got that ball, and he became somebody different. He wasn't content merely to catch the ball. You could tell that he wanted to score, and he did. So he's one of their key players, obviously their best player on defense. But the other linebacker spot, other inside linebacker spot, Gregorius Kraft didn't do much. That's a new position. I know he played it a little bit last year, but he hasn't had much game experience at that position. And Jeremy Banks was a bull in a china shop out there. Stupid plays, really. And it bothers me when I have a team and my linebackers aren't all natural linebackers. I think it's such an intuitive position, and repetition matters, and guys just have instincts for it. I think Jeremy Banks is athletic and is an aggressive, overly aggressive player. But I don't know if he has the intuitive skills to play middle linebacker.
With Banks, it's interesting because I thought he flashed more potential in terms of ability to play the position than what I saw from Crouch. I thought Jeremy Pruitt made a really good point in Monday's press conference because he was getting a question from a reporter that was sort of, you know, well, coach, two personal foul penalties aside, you know, what'd you think of the way Jeremy Banks played on Saturday? Sort of a, well, he looked really good type question, you know? And I really enjoyed Pruitt's answer. He basically said, well, why should we put those two personal foul penalties aside? I mean, that's part of playing the game, right, is not committing two stupid 15-yard penalties. And he's right on that. I mean, it's encouraging that Banks showed some knack for the position. I mean, he blew up two screens at the line of scrimmage. But, boy, those two personal foul penalties in the second half, I mean, that could have cost Tennessee the game. It was fortunate that neither of those penalties – resulted in drives that ended in touchdowns. I mean, you can't have that from really anybody on the roster, but you can't have your middle linebacker, you know, being a personal foul waiting to happen.
Blakey reminds me of a player you wouldn't remember. You weren't here then. You were covering the mighty Mizzou Tigers at the line, but Jansen Jackson, a defensive back, a strong safety for Derek Dooley, 4-star recruit, really highly rated, very athletic, fast, and he loved blowing up running backs and receivers. Really hard hitter. And he cost Tennessee a bowl game against North Carolina, Music City Bowl, with a personal foul. And you were always wondering what he might do.
You know, we were talking about potential weaknesses that opponents might be able to exploit on Tennessee. You mentioned the linebackers. I just wonder about the middle of this defense overall. You know, I thought the cornerbacks looked really good against South Carolina. I thought Alante Taylor had one of the best games of his career. He was really active in run support. I thought he was really good in coverage. You didn't see him going after Taylor a lot. And when they did, it didn't turn out very well. And even Kenneth George, I thought, looked like a serviceable cornerback. So, and the outside linebackers played fantastic. But I wonder about the middle of this defense. You know, the defensive line, I almost couldn't believe the stat book when I looked at it after the game. The defensive linemen combined for two tackles against South Carolina. Two. And it just almost doesn't seem possible. You'd think you'd just stumble into a ball carrier at some point and get a couple assisted tackles. And when I rewatched the game, I thought, well, maybe just the stat keeper wasn't very generous. No, I mean, it was like the defensive linemen were ghosts. They were never involved in tackles. Now, that's a little deceiving because sometimes Tennessee's outside linebackers do line up with the hand in the turf. But really, the interior of that line was not really doing much of anything for Tennessee. You mentioned the inside linebacker position. I think we both feel good about Toa Toa. The other spot continues to be a question mark. And I thought the safety play was left something to be desired. I mean, Bryce Thompson was out of position playing safety. You know, he's obviously better as a cornerback or even a nickelback option, I think. Tennessee thought they needed him at safety due to depleted secondary. But I thought at the safety position, Nigel Warrior's absence was sort of glaring. And so I just wonder about the whole middle of this defense going forward.
Yes, Jonathan Kongbo, former Tennessee defensive lineman, came to mind. I think he might have averaged 0.3 tackles per game for his career. But the guys that really stood out to me on defense were Toto, obviously. And as you mentioned, Delonte Taylor, I think it was his very best game. He was very aggressive and very good in tackling, as in addition to coverage. And DeAndre Johnson, with those 2.5 sacks, had a great impact on the game, and Tennessee needed that. But, see, I thought Tennessee's defensive front would be better, kind of like I thought its offensive line would be better. I thought in the interior of the line on both sides, if you take out Trey Smith on offense, I don't think Tennessee was any better than South Carolina. And that's not a good sign going forward. I mean, you run into some of these other teams with better all-around lines on both sides of the ball, that could be troublesome. See, I really like the way Greg Emerson finished last season for Tennessee. I thought he came on strong and didn't see much of him Saturday.
No, and Karat Garland was another I thought was playing a lot better at the end of last season. And he didn't give Tennessee much Saturday. And I thought Aubrey Solomon, who didn't play much, it looked like he was not in physical shape to play. I know he spent some time in quarantine in the preseason, and he looked like his physical conditioning needs to improve if he's going to make much of an impact this season. And, of course, Darrell Middleton didn't make the trip for the game, so they were a man down there. And, yeah, overall, just pretty underwhelming night for the defensive line. But final thing, John, let's get our predictions in for this tilt between the Vols and the Tigers on Saturday. I'm going to go 34-24 Tennessee. 34-24. What do you got?
Very close to that, 34-20. So we're pretty much thinking the same way on that. With Missouri, again, the bottom line, I just can't get that 35-3 score in the third quarter out of my head. I just don't think the Tigers are very good.
There you have it. All right, John, we'll see if the Tigers make you backpedal from that assessment. But we'll break it down next week and look ahead to that Georgia game. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.